Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of mind power. We're trying to reach right now Gary Kowalski. He's written a wonderful book called Goodbye Friend, Healing Wisdom for Anyone Who's Ever Lost a Pet. And his book is just absolutely wonderful. He's back on the East Coast. Apparently, he is traveling, and so we're trying to link up with him. So as soon as we get him on the line, then we are going to be bringing him to the airwaves. I wanted to chat with you for just a minute about some of the things that happen in our world that are just so nonsensical. They just absolutely are unbelievable. And you'd think in today's environment we'd be able to eradicate some of these things that are so nonsensical. Now, what are they? They're laws. I was watching a program, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, it was a special. And it was about how over 80,000 laws have been passed. Now, can you wrap your mind about that? That involves the federal government. I don't think it includes a lot of the smaller governments. It might. But that is a huge number of laws. Well, what happens with all of the rest of them that are on the books?
Your guest is with us now.
Do they ever go out of style? Well, I guess they don't. But our guest, Gary Kowalski, is with us right now. Gary, I'm so glad we were able to reach you.
Donna, it's a pleasure.
I absolutely loved your book. Just
thank you
absolutely
so much.
Loved it. Of course, I had to have some Kleenex. But
yes.
It is absolutely phenomenal how you were able to get across some wonderful, wonderful messages. Now, I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You're a Unitarian Universalist minister. You've written 7 books already on nature, spirituality, science, and the environment. And you travel quite a bit, talking to different groups in different places and in the country. Why was this so important for you to write this wonderful book, Goodbye, Friend? Was it part of your healing?
I love animals. I would say animals have changed my life. They've been part of my family. They've touched my mind, heart. Anybody who shares a life with an animal, you know, comes to this point where you have to say goodbye, and it's never easy, but there's not much support out there for that.
When you began your book, the first line in the book says, pets are not petty. And I thought, oh, that's so true. We have a Scottish Terrier, and he has one of the biggest hearts in the world. Of course, he's very much a terrier, so he's extremely independent.
Right.
I really appreciated what you said is the word pet is related to the word petty, means small, insignificant, or
well, but it can also mean cherished or especially near and dear.
Mm-hmm.
But the loss of a pet is often minimized by others. And when you lose a family member who's a human being, often there will be at least some kind of support from friends, coworkers, notes of sympathy. Yeah, attitudes are starting to change, but you'll still hear comments like, oh, it was just a dog, just a cat. You know, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book. I also wrote it because my dog, Chinook, was about 11 years old when I began this project. And at that age, you see the handwriting on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know that these beloved creatures are not going to be with us forever. So at that point, I'd been a minister for many years, helping other families through loss and grieving. And I guess I wrote the book partly for myself, to help me face that day that I knew would come.
So many people, their animals are their world. they may not have even really good relationships with human beings, but with their animals, it makes all the difference in the world. And this is something that lots of times people have a tough time recognizing. And, of course, in hospitals, in various aspects of therapy, we are coming to honor and respect these different creatures who, when they're brought into environments where before they were forbidden, now they are accepted. They have to go through a training process to make sure that they'll be able to work in environments, but it doesn't make any difference whether it's a little tiny flying squirrel to a German shepherd and anything in between. It's
important. Animals are great natural healers. We brought the therapy dogs of Vermont into our church one day, and Steve Ryman, their trainer, was telling us about a visit to a hospital room. He takes these German shepherds around to pediatric wards. We have kind of a regional hospital. A girl had been flown in from New York. She had an aneurysm let go in her brain. She'd been in a coma, unconscious for 5 days, and nothing that the doctors could do could wake her up. Steve came in with his dogs. The girl was lying there unconscious. The mother left and to get a cup of coffee about this time. By the time mom got back, her daughter was awake, smiling, cheerful. What had happened while she was out of the room, one of those dogs had crawled across this adolescent girl's chest, got up there in the bed with her and just sprawled across her. And her arms that had been lying lifeless, motionless for 5 days, when she felt that big furry pooch on top of her, they just kind of lifted up, levitated in the air, and circled that dog. So, you know, that was puppy love doing what modern medicine couldn't.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful story. You have a poem in here by Rudyard Kipling called Four Feet. I've done mostly what most men do and pushed it out of my mind, but I can't forget, if I wanted to, 4 feet trotting behind. Day after day, the whole day through, wherever my road inclined, 4 feet said, I'm coming with you, and trotted along behind. I thought that was just such a lovely poem to bring in here. You have a wonderful, wonderful array of stories, and one of them in your book is about a case not unlike the young girl that you just talked about, but this was a boy who was comatose, and his
pet dog,
Rusty,
that's right,
literally brought
in
twice.
His dog, Rusty, came in. So this is not an isolated incident. No, you know, we know from solid research that animals, as I said, are healers. You lower your risk of chronic disease. Having an animal in the home will tend to lower your heart rate, your blood pressure. Even being in a hospital room post-surgery where you can look out and see birds and trees and living things will reduce your need for anesthetics after the operation and will enhance post-surgical healing. This has all been proven.
You made a comment in your book that I found quite interesting, and that is that with research, people that lose cats have a much more intense grief patterning than those that lose dogs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I don't want to overemphasize that. There was one study that showed that people who have lost cats have a more complicated and longer-lasting grief reaction, but it was one study. I think what's clear is that we form close emotional bonds with creatures of all kinds and all species, and when they die, it hurts. It's just like losing a beloved friend or family member. So, you know, it's possible that with cats, maybe cats are adopted more often by people who live alone, who can keep an animal in a single apartment. Dogs may be more family animals, and people have more family and social support. It's hard to interpret the findings of a single study.
Boy, that's the truth. You have another poem in here regarding a horse, The Prayer of the Old Horse, which I think is quite profound. See, Lord, my coat hangs in tatters like homespun old threadbare. All that I had of zest, all of my strength, I've given in hard work and kept nothing back for myself. Now my poor head swings to offer up all the loneliness of my heart. Dear God, stiff on my thickened legs, I stand here before you, your unprofitable servant. Oh, of your goodness, give me a gentle death. Amen. The prayer of the old horse. This is someone that really had an empathy with these animals. And horses can live to be about 30 years of age.
Yeah, and 30 or 40.
Yes, and some of them are just amazing that they have, even sometimes when they have physical ailments, that they like to last that long. Elephants can be 70, 80, even 100 years old. But you get down to the ferrets or little hamsters, and you give a scale in your book of the average ages. Now, it can be less, it can be more.
Oh, yeah, lifespan tends to increase with size, generally speaking. So, you know, a little mouse or a gerbil is going to live a couple of years. An elephant, like you said, might live 70 or 80. They have a lifespan like our own. So longevity increases on the same scale as size. But what's interesting to me is that every creature gets about the same number of heartbeats. Every creature gets about the same number of lungfuls of air, whether its span is long or short on the earth. And I don't know, there's something about that helps me understand that every creature lives at its own proper pace. Nature has set its rhythm, and within its own frame of reckoning, its lifespan is fully complete.
You make a comment in your book about how you talk to your animals, and I do the same thing. And for those of you out in the audience, you don't have to be loony to do this. I know most of my audience relates to that, because I think any of us that have pets, whether it's a fish or it's a dog, an elephant, it doesn't make any difference. We talk to them.
Well, of course we do, and they talk back, I think, too. They tell us that they're listening, that they love us, that we have an important place in our lives. Your prayer of the old horse, give me a kind and gentle death. I have a chapter about how you make that difficult decision when to let go of an animal, when euthanasia becomes a choice that you need to contemplate. And, you know, I suggest that when I'm leaving my dog and going on a trip, I usually talk to him. I tell him where I'm going, how long I'll be gone, what arrangements I've made for his care, so forth. Whether or not he understands every single word I say, I think he intuits the emotional tone behind my words, reassurance, comfort. And in just the same way, when we have to say goodbye to our animals, we can talk to them, and through our tone, they'll understand that this is a separation, but we'll be with them to the very end, that we love them, that we care for them, that there's nothing to be afraid of. And I'm sure that by accompanying them to that that final passage, we help to make their exit so much easier. The kind of last gift we would wish to give our loved ones.
I agree. You have a fabulous story about a horse, Kalia, that I'd love for you to share with my audience, because the owner said the horse made the decision about the death that she was to have. And
yes,
I think that's a very interesting statement for anyone to ever make. I understand it totally, because I've had a number of dogs. But would you tell her story?
Yes, this was a horse owned by a friend of mine, Dee Kalia. And this was not an elderly horse. It was a horse really in the prime of life, but it had suffered a case of poisoning, probably some kind of plant poisoning, and the situation was not responding to treatment. And so finally, Dee had to make the decision to call the vet. Up to that point, the horse had really resisted the application of medication, which required the insertion of a nasogastric tube and a certain amount of unpleasantness. At this point, though, the horse seemed ready to let go, relaxed, trusting, understanding what was happening. The vet came and was able to insert the tube for the medication that would end her life, and the horse really chose her own time to exit.
I think many times in our modern world, that's not something that's easy for people to accept, and it is. We're all going to experience it at some time, but I think that we often want to not have that occur. It seems like socially it's a very tough thing for a lot of people to deal with.
Well, naturally it's tough. Death is never easy. I think, though, that our animals can be teachers here, though, for us, because they seem to come to the end of life as they travel through the rest of life with such serenity, with such acceptance, with such grace. They don't, by and large, they don't seem to trouble themselves with the kind of foreboding that we humans feel about the end of life, and perhaps there's wisdom for us there.
You have a chapter on working with children, and I think it was a very poignant chapter because I remember my daughter when her hamster died, and I happened to not be at home. I was working, and the babysitter, we didn't have cell phones at the time, the babysitter just tried reaching me through a phone, could not. And the young woman that was babysitting her said, "Oh, my goodness, this is just awful to have to go through." And you recommend some very good things in dealing with children and helping them become aware of death instead of insulating them from the experience, actually helping them to understand what's going on. And you have a very poignant story about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I thought that that was quite significant.
Yes, Kubler-Ross, of course, was the world's foremost authority on death and dying. She told a story about her own childhood. She had pet rabbits. And Elizabeth, as a child, was one of three. She was a set of triplets. She said these bunnies were the only ones who could tell her apart from her sisters. But her father, who seemed to have been a rather hard-hearted parent, decided that he wanted to eat the rabbits, and he ordered her successively, one by one, to take them to the butcher to be killed and prepared for the family table. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said she was so traumatized by that that she repressed that whole memory. She didn't recover it until she was an adult. So a loss of an animal, particularly, few children are going to suffer such a traumatic loss, but any loss will affect them very, very deeply. They respond to death with all the same emotions as adults. They just don't always have the same level of understanding or the cognitive equipment to deal at a philosophical level with death. So I usually suggest that parents follow a policy of honesty and explaining that, you know, all life ends. This is part of our world, not to try to shelter children from harsh realities, not to use euphemisms in talking about death, not to say, Fido went to sleep. You know, that's going to give the child fears of bedtime. Not simply to say, "Oh, Kitty got sick and died." That may give the child fears that, you know, a sickness is going to lead to grave consequences. It's also important to reassure a child that the death didn't have anything to do with them, to prevent any unnecessary feelings of guilt. You can explain that the pet is dead, and that means it doesn't feel anything. It's not suffering. It doesn't see or hear or experience its world in any way. Children live in a very concrete universe, so being as specific and down-to-earth as possible is usually a good idea, particularly when dealing with younger children.
You go into a little bit of history, and pet cemeteries are nothing new. And you apparently did some research on some old cultures, like the Egyptian cultures and some others, about how animals were very much respected and appreciated by these different cultures. Tell us some of the research that you came across.
Oh, yes. Well, animals have been revered in many cultures. And some of the oldest burials that have been excavated by archaeologists show that animals have been buried with their pets for many, many years. A site excavated in Israel dating to 12,000 before the Common Era. It's a woman with her dog, and rather touchingly, the human's hand seems to be placed on the dog as though petting or protecting it. From time out of mind, people have been buried with dogs, apparently because people felt that canines might be some kind of guide to the afterlife, actually. So you find dogs buried with their masters in China. You find ceramic dogs in the tombs of native people from Mesoamerica. This occurs in Europe in the Middle Ages. You find effigies of the deceased, and there at their feet there's a sculpted dog. It seems to be very old, and a very widespread hope or belief that our dogs might accompany us on the final journey.
There are some of the most adorable photographs in this book, and the one I'm looking at right now is this precious guinea pig that has these huge eyes. It just is absolutely adorable. And I think that there are so many wonderful stories, and one of them is about Natalie, who was a gold and white guinea pig. And there, you've got a friend, Reverend Elizabeth Tarbox, and she wrote a eulogy about this guinea pig.
Yes, yes. Well, I often advise people who've suffered a loss to write a eulogy. You know, I've written a lot of eulogies in my 30 years of ministry, sometimes for my own family members or people very near and dear to me. And it's difficult sometimes to vent your feelings, to put your emotions onto paper, but I've always found that it's a very healing and cathartic process. So I do recommend that for people who are working through their grief. Elizabeth wrote a beautiful, touching eulogy for Natalie, the guinea pig, a little rodent who only lived for 2 or 3 years, but brought such tenderness, such authenticity, genuineness into her home and awakened in her qualities that she was glad to have, affection and awareness of her responsibility to protect a small and defenseless creature. I think she didn't know how that little rodent had touched her life until the time came to say goodbye.
A section in your book deals with experiences that people have with animals after they've died. And I myself had experiences with our pets that have passed over. And one in particular, a Scotty named Pepper. She came and visited me more than once. You relate a number of stories, and one of them I had to chuckle at, that there were paramedics at someone's home, and the paramedics kept saying, "Remove the dogs from the room. We can't go in." But there were no dogs there.
Right. Well, if you've been in ministry or worked with people who are in grief very long, you start to hear inexplicable stories, and I don't have explanations for them, but they raise questions. A woman wrote to me to tell me about this experience of very sadly losing her husband. He suffered a heart attack, and she called the aid car. The paramedics came and went into the bedroom and began trying to resuscitate him. Meanwhile, the woman had their two dogs. She could see the dogs clearly. She was in the kitchen, and they were right out through the sliding glass door on the patio. But the paramedics several times shouted to her, "Please, lady, get this dog out of the bedroom." And she shouted back, "The dogs are right here. The dogs are here with me." And they repeated, "Please remove the dog from the bedroom." She couldn't understand it. She was asking herself, what in the world were they talking about? What dog was this? And then she realized her husband, who passed away, had one of those special dogs. Many of us have what I call a forever dog. We imprint on these animals, and they imprint on us. There's just a bond that's unlike any other. His forever dog was Ginger, who had died some years previously. And she speculated or understood that this was Ginger in the bedroom with her husband as he was dying. As the paramedics worked on him, the dog Ginger was waiting there to take him to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful, a curious
wonderful
story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a terrific story. And I know, as a minister myself and as a counselor, I've heard so many stories like this where people have had the awareness of that beloved friend coming back, keeping them company, letting them know that they were fine and that they were happy, and they're there waiting to welcome us when our time comes. And regrettably, so many times those pets that we have aren't going to have as long a lifetime as we do. So we just need to remember, too, to open up our hearts and our environments to let new friends in, because they are here for a particular amount of time. Now, I know we're just about out of time, Gary. What is one of the most rewarding factors that you've had in writing this book?
Well, people have called me to thank me. You know, they've called me because they've said, you know, my pastor or my priest told me animals don't have souls, and I've been struggling with this, and I just want to thank you for helping me accept this and to make sense of it. So, you know, if this helps one person through the difficult process of saying goodbye, I'll feel very, very gratified.
Gary Kowalski, he's written a number of other books. Gary, what's your website that people can go to find out about your other writings and about the work that you do?
Yeah, it's www.kowalskibooks.com, KOWALSKI. And Goodbye Friend, as well as my other books, is available on Amazon or from other chain or independent bookstores.
Well, it's been a delight having you as a guest on the show. Thank you so much. The book is wonderful. And we'll close with this little poem
too,
that you have by Walt Whitman. It's "Nothing is ever really lost or can be lost. No birth, identity, form, no object of this world, nor life, nor force, nor any visible thing. Appearance must not foil, nor shift its sphere, confuse thy brain. Ample are time and space, ample the fields of nature." Walt Whitman, out of Leaves of Grass. Thanks again, Gary Kowalski, for being my guest today. His book is Goodbye Friend, Healing Wisdom for any one of you that has lost a pet or maybe have an animal that is close to that time in their life. This book is a wonderful
Donna
read.
Thanks, Donna.
You're more than welcome. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Check out KowalskiBooks.com. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I wanted to finish what I had started chatting with you. Oh, before I do that, here's the phone number if you want to call in and talk with me today. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need is your first name or your initial. Let me tell you what I perceive. And then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that might be on your mind. At the beginning of the show, because we were trying to reach Gary, I had started talking about laws and how we have had apparently 80,000 new laws, if you can wrap your head around that, 80,000 new laws that have been put on the books. That's a whole bunch of legal stuff. What happens with some of the old stuff? Why don't we ever get rid of it? Let me share with you some wacky, wacky legal laws that should just be totally obliterated. This is a law in Oklahoma. You're not supposed to get a fish drunk in Oklahoma. You could go to jail. And there's no catching whales either. It's against the law. Now figure that one out. You wonder if somebody was drunk when they made up the law. There's no water around Oklahoma to speak of. Not that Oklahoma doesn't have water, but there's no ocean. There's not a chance. In a million years, well, maybe in a million, of a whale being in Oklahoma, unless they're brought in? Why aren't these laws just dumped? Kirkland, Illinois, there is actually a law in the book where no bees are allowed to fly. Now figure that one out. The ancient code of Hammurabi in Babylon specified that the merchant, if he made beer, he could be put to death. And you know, in Natchez, Mississippi, there's a law that says elephants can't drink beer. Where in the world were people when they put these things together? I know maybe it was done in the 1700s. Maybe somebody brought through an elephant. But why do we keep these silly laws on the books? Why are they not removed? Good question. I think we get so entangled with legalese sometimes, and this is just Donna opinion, that it's absolutely amazing. Why they won't remove this stuff is beyond me. Can't figure it out. Do you have anything wild and wacky in your area of the world? Let me know if you do, because I'd love to have it or share it on the air, because I just think it's amazing. You know, there's in France, at one time, it actually was against the law to utter the name of Napoleon's favorite flower in public. Honestly, we human beings are beyond. You know what the flower was? A violet. So you couldn't mention violet. What if someone had been given that name? I guess they changed their name. Anyway, that law is no longer in effect. Just thought I'd share that little bit of trivia with you. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you would like to chat with me about something that is on your mind. I wanted to share a story with you because we were talking about animals. And this is a story that is from India. And it comes from the Mahabharata. And there is a hero in the saga who is a very uprighteous, honorable person. But he has this tail that is wound around his personality and his experience. And they're on their final, he and his brothers are on a final pilgrimage to the Himalayas. And one by one, his brothers fall aside. They've got a lot in the way of burdens. But the hero of the story, who is determined to achieve the summit and is such an honorable person, he makes it. And when he's at the summit, there's the king of all the gods. The name of the king is Indra. He wants to take this honorable young man to heaven in a golden chariot, but there's a catch. Indra tells the hero that he must leave his dog behind because this creature is not worthy of eternity. Well, the hero says there's no place in heaven for persons with dogs. No, the hero didn't say that. Indra, the king of all the gods, says it. Well, the hero, whose name is Yudhisthira, said, "This dog, O Lord of the past and the present, is exceedingly devoted to me. He should go with me. My heart is full of compassion for him." The hero would not betray his friend. And it worked out as a very good choice to have made. Now, these are myths, of course, that are passed through many different cultures. But I think really what it speaks to more than anything else is honoring life in whatever form it is. And for those of you that have had pets like I have, you know that there is an aspect of loyalty with animals. It's just wonderful. And when we are their caretakers, they're totally dependent upon us. So I think honoring and respecting them is vitally important in life. Because if we can't respect and honor life in its various forms, how can we honor and respect our own? I think it goes hand in hand. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I want to let you know tomorrow we're going to be talking about a subject you don't hear discussed very often, and it's high-risk pregnancy. Now, for whatever reasons, and there are a lot of things that have been guessed at, but the aspect of high-risk pregnancy is something that many women have to contend with. Many women are having children later in life, and so high-risk pregnancies are much more common than what we have been aware of in the past. Well, we have a wonderful guest who is going to be discussing that because she was a woman that was in that category with her children. Her name is Kelly Whitehead, and she's dared to take this subject on. Also, we're going to be talking tomorrow with Susan Harmon. We're going to be talking about the Emerald Spiral Expo and various aspects of psychic development and her expertise with stones. So we're going to have two guests tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Lou Paradise, dealing with the drug industry and various aspects of wellness. Then we will be talking with two authors on Thursday, Shortcuts to Inner Peace, and then Harmony and the Bhagavad Gita. So we've got that coming up, and then the Velikovsky Heresies. Have you ever heard of Velikovsky? I hadn't. Well, on Friday, we are going to be talking about this man who was extremely advanced in his thinking with Laird Scranton. So we've got a very interesting lineup this week, and I hope you'll tell your friends and join us. Meanwhile, if you want to give me a call me at 888-627-6008. mystery, the unusual, the phenomenal. It's always intriguing to me. And one of the things I wanted to share with you today was a story about toads in holes. Now, there are many places, like Death Valley, where creatures, dependent on the weather, somehow have evolved to be able to go into a form of hibernation. They go into this hibernation and they can be like these wonderful little critters in Death Valley. There's shrimp there and there's also little frogs that they go into this hibernation mode and it can last for years and years and years. Then when there's a little bit of moisture, bingo, they come to life, they breed, and then they go into hibernation again. It's a fascinating phenomenon. Scientists still are very perplexed with it. But these are some unusual stories about toads in holes. This particular story occurred in 1865 in Hartlepool, England, and these stories have been substantiated. They've been documented. This occurred on April the 8th. Now, 25 feet below the surface of the earth, there were laborers who broke open a boulder of magnesium limestone and discovered a living toad. Just one. And it had been in a hollow that fit its body perfectly. The eyes were just absolutely bright as they could be. They said the mouth of this toad seemed to be sealed shut. It had trouble breathing, and a barking noise came out of its nostrils. This amphibian was the color of the rock at the beginning when they found it. But soon turned brown. Now, the Hartlepool Free Press said it's absolutely amazing because the claws of the forefeet are turned inwards and its hind legs are of extraordinary length and unlike the present English toad we're aware of. And then there was an article that followed the discovery that said there had been records about how many times over 100 years previous that live entombed toads had been discovered in this area that these laborers had been working in. They found them in freshly cut trees. They found them in a slate quarry. They found them in a seam of coal in limestone rock. Also, they found them in a bridge fortification. Another place that a toad was found in 1719 was in France. It was a medium-sized toad. It was found in a form-fitting hole in the exact middle of a large elm tree, the trunk of that tree. They find this creature. And also in France, a tree, when it was at the log mill, that was being turned into planks, and they found inside the tree, about the size of a cup, there were 68 tiny brownish-yellow toads. They were about 2 centimeters long. They were very healthy, and they were very active. And the French Academy of Science was so amazed with this discovery, and when they researched it, they said all about them was solid yellow wood, with nothing to indicate how they could have gotten there, how long they've been there, or how they could have lived without food, drink, or air. And in 1958, in Utah, there was a petrified tree that had become lodged in a vein of ore. And they found inside that petrified tree an egg-sized cavity. There was this little bitty frog, no webbed toes. There were suction cups at the end of its fingers. And that tiny little creature, once that petrified tree was open, lived for about 28 hours. And then it died. Amazing things. Makes you wonder how they could have survived. What was it that allowed them, enabled them to live in those unique circumstances? Fascinating stuff. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. I have a very special story I wanted to share with you about how a group of very, very primitive people have come into the new age to save their environment. It's absolutely amazing. So I'm going to share that with you in a minute. Before I do want to remind those of you who are in the state of Washington, two major events are coming up that I'm participating in. This coming Saturday, I'm going to be appearing at the Emerald Spiral Expo in Kent, Washington. The event is it's one of the few in the area that really has been around for such a long time. It enables anyone who wants to explore the psychic, meet with different people of different experiences and modalities. Also, there's going to be a lot of vendors there. But this is held in Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. Very easy to find. The hours are 9 to 5. And if you'd like to have more information on it, I'm going to be there doing readings. And also, I'll have an abundance of books. I'm having to clear out my library. Yes, that's what I have to do a few times a year because I just get so many wonderful publications and I just can't keep them all. I have a full-scale library here after 11 years of doing all this kind of programming. But anyway, if you will just get in touch with them at emeraldspiral.com, emeraldspiral.com, you'll get all of the details right there on the website. April the 14th, my third Quantum Mind class is coming up. I'm really excited about this. Robert Newman is going to be teaching about Chinese medicine, how we can use it in everyday life. This is going to be on that Saturday. The hours will be from 10 until 4. We are taking reservations now. We're only able to have 25 students, and I'm pleased with the people that are calling in because I know it's going to be a very interactive experience, as every one of these classes have been. So if you or a friend would like to participate in this class, call my office, please, 253-582-5604. It's being held in the same location again in University Place. And I have all the details up on my website, DelphiInternational.com. But if you need more details, want more information, Robert's going to be teaching about Chinese medicine, how it applies in everyday life. I'm going to be teaching about dream interpretation. We're also going to be doing mind exercises so that you can prove to yourself about your own intuitive capacity. So call my office, 253-582-5604. I mentioned that there are these people that are considered primitive by so many people's marks of evaluation, but they are not. They are people that have chosen to live their life in a particular way. They are in Brazil. They're called the Suripe tribe, and they were losing and are losing tremendous amounts of forest. Well, their chief, Elmir, is quite an interesting man. When you look at his picture, you think, this guy can't possibly know very much. But I'll tell you what. This man decided that he was going to step into the 21st century because he found that his life was in danger, and there is a Surui reserve, but he was having major problems with loggers Now, in 2007, he left his homeland because there were renegade loggers that put a $100,000 bounty on his head. Since 1998, 11 murders of Amazon tribal leaders have been attributed to loggers. Now, the same year, that was 2007, sponsored by the Amazon Conservation Team, he was able to travel to the U.S., and he went to visit Google headquarters in California. And he went into Google and asked a question. He said, could you chart the territory of my people? Could you outline the reserve, mark our villages, the hunting grounds, sacred sites, all kinds of things? And he said, I believe that if you can assist me in this, we can protect my people and show the world what's happening with the deforestation and the attacks. Also, it would make the government aware of what was going on. And he said, we want to raise enough money to restore our rainforest. We want to plant 1 million trees. He said, training and education is now our kind of war. We know we have to adapt. Well, I'll tell you what. Google took up the challenge, and they actually had teams that went to the Amazon training the Suri people on how to use computers, cameras, smartphones, so that they could do a lot of the work that was necessary. They used GPS technology, and then they were taught how to upload everything to the internet connections. And I have these photos in front of me. And these are people, forget it. They're far from primitive. These are very handsome people, very intelligent people, and they have adapted to the sophisticated technology that we take for granted here. Their chief was just absolutely thrilled with all of this. Now, they have a challenge because there's no phone service or wireless connection on the reserve itself. So the people in the tribe drive for close to 2 hours to the nearest town that has a Wi-Fi connection. Now, they have been outlining things. They have been doing everything necessary to bring awareness to the world about what's going on. Do you know that this tribe, in utilizing up-to-date technology that Google was able to teach them about, they figured they are going to be able to become financially independent. And do you know how they plan on doing it? Coffee and ecotourism. That's right. Those are the two areas they figured out. And this tribe is making a difference. It actually has had an impact on assisting the awareness of what's really going on, but also dealing with loggers. They said, you can't touch us. You can't do anything. We're going to take what we want. So his plan, the chief's plan, is bigger than fighting deforestation and illegal logging. He said they want to preserve the rainforest. He said nobody believed we could get the illegal loggers out, but we did. They came ahead. So if you're facing challenges in life and think that you cannot adapt to change, think of these people. Didn't even know anything about cell phones. When they found out, the chief of their tribe was wise enough to say, we must adapt. And they have. And they're still keeping the quality of their life as they choose to do it. We can do the same. After all, isn't that what life is all about? Being aware that you can do something when other people say it's impossible? This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless you. Have a magnificent day. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.